It is day 60. Hard to believe. No signs of an assault inside Nancy Guthrie's home, but there was blood on the outside. A masked suspect on camera. Doors propped open. Still no arrests. Now, famous true crime journalist Nancy Grace, who is a best guest on this show, is sounding the alarm, saying the fish stinks at the head, talking about Sheriff Chris Nanos. And as the investigation spirals into more and more confusion, Savannah Guthrie herself is left asking a really difficult question no daughter should ever have to ask, and that is this somehow all my fault?
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to the global phenomenon that is Surviving the Survivor, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. Hard to believe. Day 60 in the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie. I don't think any of the people on this panel, including myself, thought that we would still be talking about this 60 days in, but here we are. Instead of answers, a lot of contradictions, a lot of different theories about what happened, a lot of criticism aimed especially at Sheriff Chris Nanos. And we have a case that appears to be getting more confusing rather than less confusing. But here to help sort it out, we've got, from Pima County, the home of Tucson, Arizona, retired Pima County SWAT commander, Lieutenant Bob Krieger, is in the house. Good to see you. Mike Alcazar of NYPD fame, retired detective from the NYPD, the biggest and arguably the best law enforcement department in the country. And last but certainly not least, Detective John Bueller out of Modesto in California. And he worked on the Lacey Peterson case. So, John, great to have you. Appreciate you being here. And Bob and Mike, good to see you guys as well. Let's just start with the absolute most obvious, Bob. 60 days in, 2 months, when this story first broke, did you think that you'd be a guest on a podcast 60 days later trying to figure out what happened still?
No to all those things. Probably more so being a guest on a podcast multiple times now with you. But, you know, when cases like this start, you know, kidnappings, abductions, home invasions, whatever they are, they typically don't go this long. Even if you're doing, there's going to be contact, there's going to be conversations with the suspects and the family and law enforcement and all of those things. All the things that haven't happened in this one is what, you know, makes it unique. And so, yeah, 2 months in, never thought we'd be at this point. I thought there would be a lot more answers, even a few weeks ago as the reward increased. Again, thought there would be more answers at this point.
This is why I call it a global phenomenon. You got Portugal in the house. We've got over 50 countries represented here. If you are, look at this, St. Andrews, Scotland, right as I say that. Let us know where you're from, including my home state, New Jersey, because it doesn't get any more exotic than New Jersey. You can let us know where New York you are, too, since Mike is on the panel. And, of course, Tucson, and if anyone from Modesto is watching, you definitely know Detective John Bueller. But, Mike, you know, we did a separate show about a missing woman in Oakland, California last night. And Logan Clark, a private investigator who's an absolute character, besides pulling out his stun gun to show us what women should have while jogging in the park. He told me that about 800,000 people go missing every year in America. That's an astounding number. We're very focused on Nancy Guthrie, but I guess my question is, how common is this? And then how uncommon is it to go 60 days?
I think Nancy's case is fairly uncommon in the United States. It might be more common like in places like Mexico, where they normally do like abductions for ransom. But I think this case is kind of like, you know, a strange one, because especially with all the different agencies involved now, like Bob said, I thought this was going to be solved, especially once the FBI was on board that this was going to be solved quickly. But yeah, missing persons in the United States is pretty normal. They normally don't get the attention that Nancy's case is getting, which is, of course, the criticism that law enforcement gets because, you know, why is this particular case getting more attention than, you know, other unsolved missing people? So that's a question that we have to answer.
Yeah. Bob, let me bounce back to you before, because I want to ask John about his sort of theory on this case. But there's a specific question here to Bob Krieger. I hate this thought, but is it most likely the kidnappers, assuming Bob and I have to check back with you on your thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. But now a lot of people do think it was a legitimate kidnapping, including the Guthrie family. Is it most likely that they were unable to provide proof of life early on? What do you think? And that's why we haven't seen anything.
Unfortunately, I do probably think that's the route it took. I do think it was a kidnapping from the moment it started. I do think it was a very focused event and very intentional in everything that happened. And I think something happened very early on, whether it was at the house or very quickly outside the house. It was unfortunate. And that's what led to the silence from the suspects. Mm. Even after initial ransom notes that came out that may be legitimate, not the ones that went to TMZ.
Yeah. And by the way, they're not surprising us. There's actually a place called Surprise, Arizona, and shout out to Surprise since we're talking about Tucson. But John, to you, I don't think we've had you on during the course of this case. Do you have a theory? I mean, most detectives have some sort of idea in their own head about what they think happened. What is yours, if you have one?
Just to take off from what Bob said, I kind of go along with what he said. My you hate to say it because the family's still out there hoping and praying for the return of Nancy. The blood at the front of the house, the fact that there wasn't an immediate ransom demand, the fact that they didn't have a photo that she was alive suggested to me that she probably didn't survive the abduction. And so you got some guys that are probably not skilled at this. They thought it was going to be an easy thing. Maybe he had some connection to as an orbiter of somebody in the family, outside the family, not implying that the family was involved, but somebody that knew the family, because it's difficult to target her as an individual if you haven't been up there. I went up there the one day when I was down there a couple of weeks ago, and the hilly nature, you know, Bob of course knows that, he knows the area well, he worked there, but it's very hilly, it's kind of isolated. It's not like down here where I live, I can look across the street, I can see my neighbor's house right from where I'm sitting right here, but down there you don't see your neighbor's house, it's all covered in cactus and things like that. The blocks are very short, the intersections are very close. You'd have to know where you were going to go to her house. It isn't like it would be a random, oh, let's just choose this house here. At least that's what it seems like to me. So I think it was unfortunate. I don't think she survived the evening. And for that reason, they didn't know what to do. And now they're kind of stuck where she is. You'd think if it was more than one person involved that one would roll on the other for the reward that's out there, because cash is a pretty good thing to separate loyalties when it comes to people like this. Because generally, if they have a lot of cash, they're not doing stuff like this. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. There's a few things they could have been doing, but I know you'll get into more of those as we go on.
Yeah, John, I mean, if I came to you on, let's say, day three of this, and I said, hey, detective, we're going to be doing a show on this 57 days from now on day 60, would you have told me I'm crazy? Would you have thought that this, as Bob and Mike pointed out, with the FBI's involvement, that it would be solved by now?
Well, I'm not so convinced on that, and the simple reason is because of Peterson. When we worked Peterson, we as time went by, we started to gather more facts and circumstantial evidence that suggested that Scott was involved in it. And the big thing for us was finding the body. Now we don't really know what the guys have on this case. They might already have a suspect. They're keeping it close to the vest. Maybe the prosecutor down there is doing the same thing that they did to us in Stanislaus County and said, hey, we're not giving you a filing until you find the body. And so they may be sitting on that. It would be nice if they were. It'd be nicer if Nancy was alive and they'd bring her home. But the big thing for me, 3 days into it, I'd be wondering, well, how many people have you polyed? How many people have refused the poly? How have you started looking underneath their fingernails a little bit deeper? Did you go back and take a look at the will? See when the last time it was revised, who was added, who was deleted, things like that. I'm looking for a motive when it comes to these things. Financials on family members to see if somebody was in a jam, things like that. maybe somebody was, you know, on the wrong side of the track and somebody was pushing them. And there's a lot of things that you could have been doing. They probably did them. I like to think that they did, but because I'm certainly not the biggest authority on this. We all worked this thing. You know, certainly, you know, Bob worked these and Mike up there in New York City, you know, he was inundated with stuff. He was kind of like he was a surfer down at, Half Moon Bay or something, getting buried in the big waves with the crime that they had in New York when he was there.
Yeah. Space Coast on the West Coast, gifting 5 memberships. Thank you, Spacey. Ottawa, Ontario, Canada in the house. Bob, I mean, just back to the point that John was just making, since you worked in Pima County, is that the kind of thing that a prosecutor would want? Would they say to you, even if you had a person of interest or a suspect, would they say, now you got to, God forbid this is the case, but you've got to get the body for us to file anything?
It's possible, not necessarily just the body, but you've got to build a strong case. You know, people watch TV and everything's tied up in an hour episode, and that's just not the reality of it. You know, you have evidentiary hearings. There's a difference between arresting someone and convicting someone. And where they're working now is they want to work towards a conviction. And once you start making arrests and things like that, judicial clocks start ticking. So you don't want to go in too soon if you don't have all of your ducks in a row. It might not necessarily mean a body, because there have been convictions without bodies, but you want to make sure you have enough evidence, that amount that is going to get your conviction before you go down that road. So early on in cases like this, yes, they're going to be working with the county attorneys. They're going to be, hey, what more do you want? They're talking behind the scenes. They don't want to even try to issue a case like this until everyone's on board and they're shaking their heads. Yes, we can go with this.
By the way, we recorded a really interesting show last night, not because of me, but Phil Ramos was on. We looked at the Stephanie Lazarus police interview. She was convicted of murdering her boyfriend's one-time boyfriend's wife in 1986. What makes it interesting is she was a very decorated detective within the LAPD, Stephanie Lazarus, and it was a bite mark that they were able to basically draw back to DNA evidence, the bite mark back in 2009, 23 years later, they were able to basically trace it back to Stephanie Lazarus. And we watched the police interview, but what Bob was talking about with, you know, you want to be able to prosecute the case. Phil Ramos was watching that interview and it was amazing to hear how much homicide detectives, while they're conducting interviews, how much Phil Ramos would be aware of how it is going to impact a future jury panel. It was really interesting to me. It's something that I'm never really thinking of. I mean, Mike, what about that? I mean, I don't know if, you know, you're doing it with crimes other than homicides, but is that something when you're interviewing a suspect in the room, are you thinking, how is this going to play to a jury when this case goes to prosecution? Are you always thinking about that?
Yeah, I think more recently, since we went to video interrogation, we train our detectives that what's said on camera is really important. So, yeah, I think detectives are constantly aware about that, mostly being an active listener and giving the information, perhaps even like reenact the crime. I've done that several times when I've, you know, if I had like some kind of an assault, I make him reenact it. I'm always thinking about like, this is going to speak volumes when the jury watches this and instead of me testifying about it. So their mannerisms, how they behave, their nervousness, their tics. Yeah, I think most detectives, like the gentleman here, think about that all the time when they're in the box.
Yeah, Stephanie Lazarus has people in the comment section are saying her eyes said it all. She has some freaky eyes in that interview, and she gets real uncomfortable real fast. Little Miss Red Velvet OG, and then I'm going to play a little news package. But, John, back to you. If this is ultimately solved, which I think we all think it will be, people are asking, is it DNA? Would it be an informant? What's your best guess? Is there a way to predict it, John?
Well, a couple of things that would come to mind to me is if somebody stumbled across the body somehow, might be a long shot, but maybe even checking to see who was purchasing mattresses within a couple of days of the abduction. Because a pretty good way to insulate a body from discovery from above, if you bury it deep enough, is put a mattress over it, and then you're going to probably insulate it from being detected. But over and above that, DNA is a, you know, wonderful tool, but I'm wondering why we don't have any results yet. It wouldn't seem to me that they would be guarding the results of the DNA. Now, it could be a thing where the guy's not in CODIS or something like that, or he hasn't contributed to one of the, or a family member hasn't contributed to one of those private websites or search sites where you can do your DNA to find out your ancestry and things like that. That could lead to something, but those might not happen overnight. I think the best thing that we've got going on this is if there could be a fracture in the relationship, if two people are involved, or if somebody that's a family member decides, maybe they get into a fight with somebody, they knew something happened, and they decide, hey, I'm going to roll in. I mean, one of the best friends that we had when we were working homicide investigations was vindictive ex-girlfriend and wives. You know, you don't really want them in a personal relationship, but boy, they're fantastic when it comes to getting information from them, you know, if somebody does something kind of squirrely. So that's always a good thing that you can hope for. This is a tough one because, you know, like, you know, Mike and Bob said, we don't get a lot of kidnap for ransom. We get child abductions all over the United States every year, parents that have, you know, issues in a divorce and things like that. And people, of course, you know, a lot of them go missing. Sometimes they're just going missing because they want to check out from society or from their friends and family. So you get those. So they can't always attach a foul play to those things. But the true Lindbergh baby kidnapping or this thing with Nancy Guthrie, these are rare for us. And the ones that do come along, if it isn't somebody with the notoriety of Nancy Guthrie, there's probably a reason for law enforcement to kind of keep those under the vest because you don't want copycats coming out and doing them if they find out that somebody's getting cash for this. So those are just kind of random thoughts. I wasn't sure where we were going to go today. So I'm just,
I love it. And I want to follow up. This has nothing to do with this story, but I don't know if you saw in the news today, they have now linked Ted Bundy, the infamous serial killer, to a cold case. I want to say from 1974, I was just looking it up, but I saw the headlines. Curious if you saw that, John, and your thoughts. I mean, because we're talking about a case, I believe, 1974 cold case. I want to say it was California, but I have to Utah County. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on that? From 1974, it's 50 years plus ago, and they're now linking it definitively to Ted Bundy.
Well, unless Bundy forgot about that one, maybe he did so many that he didn't even think about that one. But I think if I was in Bundy's shoes and they're getting ready to strap you into the electric chair, that would be something I would pull out and flash around and say, hey, I got another one for you. And that could put him in a position to stay the execution for a while. Bundy was, I talk about him when I teach at the local academy here a couple of times a year. What a wonderful interview source he would be. He's going to play with you. He's going to just screw with you the whole time you're interviewing him. But what a fantastic guy to interview if you, as a detective, if you ever got a chance to interview somebody like that, it would just be an incredible learning experience and being kind of a macabre way, an enormous amount of fun, especially if he could get him to the point where he could see maybe a snippet of admiration, or you could find a common thing that you both had, that you had an enthusiasm for. Those were things generally that I tried to do with the people that I interviewed. And, you know, whether it was, I remember one guy, I was talking to him about riding quads and going duck hunting and things like that. And he seemed to like the fact that we talked about that. We weren't friends, but I didn't hate the guy when I got done with the interview. But those with Bundy, gosh, it would be great. You know, of course, none of us in the interview would have the serial killer backgrounds, you know, at least as a committing things that we did. But Bundy would be a great interview. And I didn't know about this case, but I'll probably look it up at 5 minutes after we get done with this cast.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. 1974. Mike, just to pick up on what John was saying, is that something that you think about, you know, when you're, you know, a major leaguer, you want to get up and bat against Shohei, you know, you want to prove yourself. Would you have liked to gone into an interview room with Ted Bundy and see how you held up against someone like him?
Yeah, I think every detective would want to do that. I mean, you know, as a rookie detective, I remember just getting in the box with the senior guys because I wanted to get the experience. I wanted to learn from, you know, the veteran detectives. Now that we have video interrogation, so we can watch it now. We can watch and learn from others' mistakes or what worked. But in the past, you had to get in the box. And what more, a better learning course than to talk with like a psychopath and see how much information you can get, how you can stand up to somebody that's a hard murderer. So yeah, I think everyone would love to do that. Why else would you become a detective if you didn't want to do that, right? You want to be in there.
Meanwhile, Krieger would be like, put him out at 230 yards and let me see if I can get him. He can run in zigzags, but he's got to be at 230 yards and I'll still get him. All right, here is the, for those who don't know, Bob's a bit of a sniper, a SWAT commander. So we joke. Here is a news package, a story about now hitting the 60-day mark. This is from Phoenix, Arizona, and there's an interview in here with one of Bob's best friends, Sheriff Chris Nanos. Here we go.
Hundreds of deputies, officers, as well as federal agents searched for Nancy. But 2 months later, we're still left with more questions than answers, especially after investigators recovered Nancy's doorbell video on February 10th, revealing an unknown masked man at her front door the night she was abducted. Federal agents say he's about 5'9 to 5'10 and was carrying a black hiking backpack, wearing a pair of gloves. A similar pair of gloves were found not too far from Nancy's home, but a DNA test produced no leads. With tips, online rumors, and reports of ransom notes drawing so much national attention, questions are mounting about how the Pima County Sheriff's Department has handled the investigation. We spoke with Sheriff Chris Nanos about where things stand this morning. He says there's still a lot of work ahead.
We still have a lot of digital evidence, forensic evidence, and we continue to plod along. I know that nobody wants to hear that, that they want it fast. I do too. But sometimes you have to put aside expediency for doing the job right.
Despite no answers about where Nancy is, who took her, or why, Savannah Guthrie says she will return to the Today Show, and that starts next week.
There you have it. Bob Krieger, Sheriff Chris Nanos said, we have digital evidence, forensic evidence, and we're plodding along. And he says to the public, I know you want it fast and we want it that way too, but sometimes you have to put aside expediency to do it right. I mean, I guess you could do it right with expediency. What do you make of his latest comments?
I think we've known kind of since day two or three of this, we've got to take everything he says with a bit of a grain of salt, the contradictory statements and things like that. That aside, you know, the other folks on the panel, they know sometimes it's not a speedy process. You know, you know, DNA takes a while, especially the electronic stuff. Not that they don't have it, but if you actually saw how much information goes into a lot of these electronic files, we're talking hundreds, if not thousands of pages sometimes. Now, digital photos, that's completely different, but there are a lot of things to do. It's unfortunate. But honestly, at this point, I don't really take much of what he says anymore at face value. If it were someone else, if it were an investigator, if it were someone from the FBI, I would probably put more credence into that. And it's unfortunate because in cases like this, the leadership does matter. You know, you have to have someone who's the spokesperson for your agency for the investigation that not only the people working for him have confidence in, but the people who are looking at it, the people from the outside, the media, the public, they want to have confidence in that as well. And that does a bit of disservice to the guys and gals working on the ground. So a long way of saying it's tough to really take what he says with any credibility at this point.
Yeah. And Bob, just to follow up here from Deb Angels, Pima County garbage dumps and landfills, have they been searched? Do we know?
I don't know if they've physically been searched. I do know that there's a handful of landfills, a lot of refuse transfer stations. I know that there was some aerial surveillance done, and I believe my gut says that it was the folks looking for the pacemaker, because it was within a day or two of that where I saw some flight patterns over the main dump, and I'm sure they weren't taking, you know, aerial views for housing or anything like that. So there was some. Were they out there, walking it, poking it with sticks like you've seen in the past, that I don't know. You know, that wouldn't, you know, for those not familiar with the Tucson area, Joel, like you and I, you know, how vast it is, the dump would be one of the last places I would put a body for those reasons. And that's held true throughout a lot of investigations that we've been through.
Yeah, it's hard to explain or overstate how vast that desert is. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute. But Mike, to you from Kelly McClellan here, 2026, we're actually sending up a spaceship to circle the moon in about 5 hours today. We can photograph license plates from space, Kelly says. We've had all the resources involved. Are you surprised that we don't even have a person of interest, a sketch? I mean, we've got the video, right? But it really hasn't revealed much. Are you surprised we don't have anything else to go on?
Yeah, 2 months out, I am really surprised. I thought we'd have something in like a week's time, you know, and, you know, you do basic investigative steps, you canvas for witnesses, canvas for video surveillance, process the DNA. You think you would come up with something. If not, you're relying on a tip. So it's very unusual. It's definitely an unusual case that we don't have any probative tips that have come in. You know, like no one is saying anything. It's kind of unusual.
Yeah. John, to you, let me just remove this comment here. But any thoughts on motive here? I mean, do you think it was strictly a financial motive and that's why it was a quote unquote alleged kidnapping or abduction for ransom, or is there something else behind it?
Well, I think money is probably the biggest one that I could think of. There, it could be revenge for something that's kept within family that maybe you don't know of. Maybe there was a friend of the family that had an issue and they decided to do this as a way to get back at him. But it seems more like cash to me than anything else. The guy's masked up, so he doesn't want her to see who he is. So the intention would seem to me that he wanted to take her alive. But the pacemaker going offline very quickly afterwards, and the blood being found in there, especially at her age and being in poor health, bloodletting to me is a big issue when it comes to that. That's why I don't really think that she survived it. But I don't know what other motives there would be in that area. It's the houses are all fairly similar there. It's an upscale neighborhood. People up there are comfortable the way they live and things like that. But there's got to be something behind her attack and her abduction. And I would think money is the primary thing I would look at.
Okay. Little Miss Red Velvet OG. Mike, to you, was there ever a situation that you're in where you just like you hit, it's almost like writer's block, but detective's block, where you just hit an absolute roadblock and you ask someone, a partner or somebody, hey, can you take a look at this and see if you see anything? Like, is it worth, the question is, should they be bringing in fresh eyes? Is that something that is ever done?
Yeah, we've done that in the past where I was assigned a case that went nowhere. As you know, our friend Joe Jackalone, he worked in cold case. That's what you do, right? You reopen a case and you investigate it from the beginning. You're not going to follow the same steps that the previous investigators did because obviously it went nowhere. So yeah, fresh eyes would probably be good. You know, maybe even another lab. Process everything in a different lab. Start the investigation over. It's 2 months in, 2 months out. You know, it might be a good thing to have somebody involved that's, you know, that might think outside the box, or maybe, you know, that can deal with it better without the noise, you know, from nanos, perhaps.
Yeah, I like the idea of a different lab. John, I'll bounce back to you from Elizabeth Wilson and feel free to expound on that. But does the FBI, John, as far as you know, have the technology to strip the mask off of the perp's face? If so, why not produce some sort of sketch? I know very early on, a very famous sketch artist in Houston for the court system tried to sketch the person. I don't think that went anywhere, but, you know, she was doing it with the mask on. Do you know by any chance that there's technology that would allow them to get a better look at his actual face, John?
Yeah, I don't know if the FBI's got that technology yet or anything like that. But, you know, kind of going back to what Mike said about another set of eyes. And of course, Bob would know this better than me. One of the things that I have a little bit of a concern about, it, I don't know if it's true or not. I'd heard that there was some shifting of assignments there at the sheriff's office and that some of the more experienced people that work violent crimes were moved to another assignment because of personnel issues, personality problems or something like that with the sheriff. And I've seen that over the years in law enforcement. Sometimes the egos get in the way and then they move some of their most talented people to another assignment because they don't like their attitude. One of the things that we see over the years is when detectives specialize and they become subject matter experts and they gain a bit of experience. I was my own worst enemy on that. My mouth was my own worst enemy at the police department. But the fact that I didn't drink alcohol and I would answer the phone at 2 a.m. and they liked my work product, I think, is what saved me from getting put on purse snatch detail or something like that. But it's if you have to have your best people, your most motivated people, your most experienced people in an assignment like that. And this is one of the areas that some agencies make mistakes on, is they decide they don't want to have permanent detectives. They don't want to make it a promoted position where somebody can go and develop their career in that area. Not everybody wants to become a lieutenant and a captain and a chief and a deputy chief and all that stuff. You know, a lot of guys just want to do the job and they have an interest in it. And if you put a roadblock in your agency for having something like happen, then you end up with something like this. I don't know. I imagine they've got great detectives there, but do they have their best detectives working on it? And it's no shade on the ones who are working on it. But if they don't have experience and they weren't trained by somebody who's done these things before, then they're going to be lacking.
Mm. Mike, I'm just wondering, by the way, someone was asking, most importantly, if that's King Kong and Popeye behind you. I can't tell. Is that who that is?
It is. I'm pretty sure it's King Kong. I don't know. Somebody gave it to me as a gift. And Popeye, we got somewhere in on the
country. Eat your spinach, kids. Make sure you eat your spinach. But, Mike, I'm just curious, watching this for the 4 millionth time, I mean, do you ever catch something new when you're seeing this suspect video playing? Are you trying to look for new stuff when you're looking at it again?
I haven't caught anything new. I've seen it a million times, and I'm watching it again. I haven't caught anything new. I mean, you know, they're talking about the lights in the background. I didn't even catch that. So,
yeah.
Nothing.
I'm with you on that. So, Bob Krieger, a couple questions for you. Brian Enton, who is actually back out in Tucson, shout out to Brian, friend of ours. He and others have reported now that the inside of the house is clean and certain rooms were literally described as immaculate. So there was apparently no signs of an assault. The home is immaculate. What do you read into that?
When I hear about that, and I've talked about it the last few days, that you're dealing with someone who's 84 years old in poor health, can't put up a fight too much, but they're still going to put up a fight. It tells me that when they got in there, they got her out relatively easy. I don't know if we're going to talk about the doors open, the prop doors and theories like that. And we'll get into all that. But, you know, I have what I would consider like an immaculate house. And I think the verbiage is important here because for me, like if I wake up in the morning and I kind of come out, I can tell if like something's been moved on the countertop by a cat. Most people can do that in their own house. Mm. And what I think the word immaculate means is, you know, nothing was knocked over, nothing was out of place. But clearly there was, because there was blood on the floor, there's blood outside. So something happened, but it didn't take a large struggle. Because I don't think, even if they stuck around after something happened and tried to put things back where they went, when the family walked through, they would have noticed if something was greatly out of place. Like I will literally tell you, if something is an inch or two off in my house and it's not dressed up, it kind of freaks me out. So I notice those things. Now, if you know, the family's not going in every day, but they're still going to be able to pick up on certain things. And those are the things that the investigators are talking about. I'm sure that, you know, not that nothing happened, but nothing unusual happened. It didn't look like they went through. They weren't trying to do a burglary. They weren't rummaging through any of the jewelry or anything like that, looking for money, whatever it might be.
Krieger, if I came home today and my dining room table was upside down and on a 45-degree angle, I literally would just walk right past it. I wouldn't think twice because my house is in insane asylum with three lunatics for kids and two dogs who are absolute maniacs. And I love the COE, but I'm the only one in the family with OCD. And I'm trying to think of business ideas. The only people my kids are afraid of are police officers. Like, I've Rob D'Amico used to come on the show. And he promised to come save us when we went to Mexico City, made the kids put air tags in their shoes and stuff. But I'm thinking instead of being a Southwest pilot, we fly.
Flight attendant.
Yeah, big difference. Sorry about that. Slight difference. I'm thinking that we fly retired SWAT commander into my house for 6 weeks. Yeah, they send dogs out to get trained. Why don't I fly you in to train my kids? Would you do that?
Absolutely. I'm looking for things to keep me busy, and I'd be happy to help. They'd learn how to cook. They'd learn how to clean, and they'd learn how to put everything away. And, you know, I'm a great house husband. That's why my wife has kept me around for so long.
Kids, I hope you are listening to the show today, because if you're a SWAT commander, you have to be organized. And I'm going to bring Bob to the house, and you're going to learn. And that goes for you, Fred and Ethel. Thank you to AR Wyoming for the super chat here. I appreciate it. Now, Krieger, back to you. Bob doesn't know this yet. Well, he knows, I told him, but he hasn't read it yet. But he is quoted all over a New York Post article that just was dropped in the last hour or so. And you, according to the New York Post, I will read it to you, Bob. You have poured cold water on a highly improbable theory that Nancy Guthrie was abducted via rugged terrain at the back of her home, insisting whoever was responsible for her disappearance clearly had to go out the front. So I think you were Brian Enton, and he was asking you, well, could they have taken her because the back doors are propped open? So explain that to us. What was Brian trying to figure out? What was he asking you, and what were you telling him?
So we've walked the terrain a few times in the neighborhood together. And just a few days ago, we walked the terrain behind her house. And like John was saying, if you're not familiar with it, it's not easy. It's not like there's no sidewalks. It's all rugged rocks, hills, cactus. Everything wants to hurt you from the flora to the fauna. So, you know, thinking about that, the question was, were they going to try and take her out the back? You think about this. She's not very mobile. If you're pulling her or trying to drag her, that's not easy to do over rugged terrain. You would see, especially in the dirt and things like that, very distinct drag marks and all these other things. I think their initial plan probably was, we'll go in the back door, we'll get her to walk out with us, and we're doing that to be seen less from the street. Well, once they realized this wasn't going to happen in a very mobile nature, I think they went to their plan B, C, D, E, or F and said, shit, let's just go out the front door, pull the car up, keep it away from the camera. And the more I think about it, that person on camera might be the second person coming up to open or wait at the front door and get rid of anything there. So as they're exiting the house, suddenly the camera's not surprising them and they're not caught on camera. So they were doing a little... the recon that might have happened in the backyard, which we've talked about, you know, from possibly a couple weeks earlier, lights being turned off and things like that or broken. The initial plan, easily out the back door, you could stay out of the view of the camera. Now suddenly, shit, they realize that that ain't happening. So we got to go out the front.
Yeah. And I've thought that could be the case as well. He's getting rid of the camera so you don't show her on the egress. But Mike from Peanut Family, and then I'll get back to John about this immaculate house. But Mike, if some of the rooms were immaculate, then why did Sheriff Chris Nanos feel the need to call in homicide detectives? And why did they stop searching 2 days later? Good question.
I think that's one of the only things that Nanos did correctly, you know, treat this as a homicide immediately so you could process scene, you know, to the best of the investigator's ability. There must have been something, you know, he saw the blood in the doorway and this is a missing elderly. You know, I think, you know, you get your best detectives in there, hopefully, to process the crime scene and preserve evidence. You know, I know they closed the crime scene, opened the crime scene, closed the crime scene 10 million times. But, you know, I think that's just the way to do it. Like when me and Joe have discussed this in the past where, you know, missing persons cases, it's probably best served if we treat it like a homicide from the get, just again, to process as much information and evidence as possible.
Yeah. I mean, John, I'd like you to weigh in, too. Again, apparently, according to Brian Enton and others now reporting that there was no signs of an assault on the inside, and the house described as absolutely immaculate. How do you read between the lines there?
Well, I echo what Mike said. You have to start work these cases at a homicide from the beginning, because you look at the age of the victim, her vulnerability, and the fact that this is not somebody who's just going down to the local bar or something like that. It's you know, totally outside what she would normally be doing. So you have to start it that way, because you can't go back at a later time and try and recover trace evidence and things that are going to be disturbed and altered if you release the scene and family members and friends come in there. You have to work it from a homicide from the beginning. Now, it's not to say that every once in a while you don't finish a crime scene and you leave and then you, oh, crap, we should have done this. And then sometimes you have to get a warrant to go back in, depending on if your suspect might have standing in the residence. But in this case, it doesn't appear that anybody that are looking at has any standing whatsoever in the place, so they can go back in at will and go look for anything else that they need. But trace evidence that's easily destroyed and lost has to be recovered right away. I go along with Bob. I think she was taken out the front, because looking around that whole property there, you're not going to walk from her pool area to the neighbor directly behind you through that cactus, especially at night with somebody who's unstable and advanced age. You're just not going to do it. Everybody's going to get chewed up by the cactus. So out the front, get her in the car, get her out of there. And there's not a lot of traffic there at night, according to some of the people that I talked to when I was down there. People are tucked in at night that time. And so in addition to that, when a car's coming around a corner, those short blocks that have the intersections close by, you're going to catch the illumination of oncoming headlights before the car turns towards you and you get eliminated directly from the light. So it'd be real easy to duck into the shadows and get out of view. And it wouldn't be unusual to see a car partially parked in a driveway or something like that, like a visitor or something, that wouldn't arouse any suspicion. The neighbors that I talked to when I was down there, some of them didn't even know who she was. They didn't know that she was related to Savannah. They didn't know that Savannah, you know, I knew who Savannah was from watching her on TV, but they didn't know that was her mom. Kind of stayed to themselves and things like that. So, if you're going to carry out a crime like this, it's probably a pretty good place to do it, because there's some limited exposure because of the way it's set up.
Yeah, in that terrain, I can't emphasize it enough how rough it is. I mean, I've told the story a million times, but even when I was living in Tucson and I used to walk Mabel Rose, my beloved Puggle, no longer with us. I literally would look for, I'm sure Bob doesn't do this because he's a SWAT commander and I'm not, but I would look for flatbed trucks to throw Mabel into when that pack of javelinas, those are wild pigs, when they came charging at me, I was ready to dive into the back of like a pickup truck with Mabel. It's a wild place. If you don't have that, you've got scorpions. If you don't have scorpions, you've got rattlesnakes. And if you don't have that, you've got the oppressive sun. There are a lot of ways for that desert to attack you. So, Mike, from Paper Chaser, and then we're going to play a little sound of best guest and true crime icon, Nancy Grace, because she's fired up. Could the situation be that someone with extensive financial resources hired these guys? And I've heard this theory before. To carry this out as an act of revenge. That might explain some things. Some people have said, how do we know that the person or people who did this are even alive still? That's a possibility too, right, Mike? But how do you weigh all this?
I think John said it, like, you have to do a victimology, right? And not only on Nancy, on the family members, any kind of history on them, any kind of financial difficulties, any kind of threats, perhaps to Savannah. And I'm sure they've done that already to rule that out, hopefully. That's all done during the investigation. And I thought about that, too, that these bad guys could be dead already, too. Right. It's definitely a possibility why we're not getting any tips. If it was more than one guy, you know, maybe somebody took somebody out, or, you know, and I wouldn't rule out the possibility that's also one person. I think I said that in your podcast before. Right? It could have been one person. One man, one story. And that's why he's keeping quiet, because unfortunately, Nancy's probably dead and there's nothing to gain from this now. So he's just staying quiet. So these are a lot of theories that people have entertained. And I'm thinking it changes every day for me.
That's a good idea, too. Thanks, Mike. You should ask Nancy Grace to come to my house for the day. She might scare them more than Bob, actually. So not a bad idea. Yeah, whatever it takes. All right. This is Nancy Grace. hanging out with Sean Hannity on his podcast. Here you go.
My fiance was murdered. I didn't even want to say words. I felt like going out in the dark in the woods and just howling like an animal. I didn't have words to say. It was so awful. Not just losing him, but in a to violent crime. Stupid, senseless. For what? For nothing.
This is her fiance.
I just couldn't take it in, especially the dichotomy of having grown up the way I did in a very loving home. And then that, just before our wedding, it was just too much. And when Savannah was talking, just her face, and she started talking to her mother when she felt like it was her fault. She said, "Oh, mommy, 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 I'm sorry, I'm sorry." It took me right back to that moment, those horrible moments when I was lying there in the dark.
All right, well, that was the wrong bite, but you get the idea. But she tees off on Sheriff Chris Nanos, Bob Krieger. She basically says something, you know, relating to the head of the fish, that's where that's where it stinks. That's the problem. When you start getting people like Nancy Grace talking to Sean Hannity, two of the bigger media voices in the country, that can become a problem for Sheriff Chris Nanos. Where do we stand with this recall? And I mean, realistically, do you think that if you get someone new, you'd have new results?
The first question first, where do we stand with the recall? A congressional candidate started that a few weeks ago. It's going through. It seems to have some pretty good teeth within the community, almost nonpartisan. Everyone seems to be at a point to where they're kind of fed up with what's been going on, not only with the investigation, but with some of the other issues that have arisen. And we can talk about that later. Do I think that would change the investigation? Unfortunately not. The good thing is the sheriff is just a figurehead. Now he has some reach and some claws and some ability to affect the investigation. But for the most part, the investigators, the detectives, the folks in the FBI, they are doing the heavy lifting. He's just presenting information. He might be pushing narratives behind the scene, telling his folks to go do certain things, which I'm pretty sure is probably happening, doing it certain ways that he likes. But that being said, I don't think it would dramatically change any of the results, even from day one, unfortunately. Like I said, he's just a figurehead. He doesn't really do much with the heavy lifting and the nuts and bolts of the investigation.
Yeah, and I agree with that. The investigators are still going to investigate. John, this is a difficult topic to broach here, but what does the panel think about family being cleared before there's essentially, I'll add to this, the person writes before all evidence is in, but apparently there's no suspect. And my understanding, without being a detective or investigator, is you don't clear people unless you have some reason to clear them. But Chris Nanos has apparently cleared family. How do you read into that?
Well, I don't think I'd walk that far out on that board myself. One thing that would maybe have worked out better for him, and you know, in his view by the public, is if he would have had a public information officer that would have been designated on this case to give daily updates on the case and be the figurehead and the one who spoke of the case, with rare interviews on the sheriff's part himself. It would have taken away the criticism, or at least some of it, on what's going on with this. So that's one of the things that we had when we were working Peterson. We had a PIO and he gave the updates, and our chief wisely stayed out of it because he was a pretty good chief. But when it comes to them clearing people, how did you clear them? Did you poly them? Did you check out all their friends? I mean, he said he cleared them. But the thing is if you didn't, or maybe you cleared them to your satisfaction and something pops up later, then you got to retract that statement. I don't like having to pull things like that back. I would have just said, hey, everybody's a suspect until we find the suspect, you know, and leave it at that. And then you don't have to backtrack. Mm-hmm.
And John, just add to, you know, the bureaucracy here. I mean, you've got a whole department that basically has voted, and Bob can tell you the details, but there was a vote of no confidence and it was overwhelming. I mean, what kind of sort of you know, it's like a gnat buzzing at your head. Like he's a constant sort of irritant to the department. How problematic is that?
Well, that's a big problem, especially when you work there and you're trying to build a career there. But, you know, this happens with a lot of agencies because agency heads, you know, sheriffs, of course, are elected, but police chiefs are not. They're appointed. And they usually are tenure at individual agencies is not even usually double digits. It's, you know, 5-7 years, something like that. And then they'll bring a new guy in and things like that. And it's kind of like raising children. What luck are you going to have a well-rounded child that grows into an adult when you insert a new parent in every 2 or 3 years? And it's kind of the same thing when you change agency heads all the time, because the new guys coming in, they got to figure out who they can trust. And then you got the line of people that want to get behind them and, you know, try and show how great they are. If you can just have a good person in there in charge for a long period of time, works out better. But for the detectives themselves, I think I'd heard that thing about they transferred a bunch of the experienced homicide guys out of the unit because of personality issues. And that's not a good way to, you know, take revenge on somebody. If they're doing a good job, who cares if you like them or not? You know, do they earn their pay? Are they solving their cases? Are they clearing them? Are their convictions holding up? Are they getting complaints? Maybe you don't like the way they crease their pants or wear their shirt or something like that. But if they're doing their job, my feeling is leave them alone. But of course, that's one of the reasons I was never a sheriff or a chief. You know, I was a detective.
Damuki here. I love this comment. A day without STS is like a day without sunshine. That's poetic, and I love it. Mike, so Jennifer Koffendoffer, retired FBI special agent, she's a friend of mine. She's on the show. She's a best guest. She spoke, you know, she does analysis for News Nation, and she's kind of taken a contrarian point of view, saying that she believes, and I hope I'm getting this right, but it's just for me reading about it, she believes it was really the effort of one person, and juxtapose that to Lieutenant Bob Krieger's good friend, retired homicide detective Kurt Dabb, who is going to come on today. He believes it was up to 3 or 4 people, but she cites, number one, control of the scene. You know, you see one guy tampering with the camera, that he appears calm, methodical, rushed, not sloppy. And also, there were no sets of, quote unquote, multiple footprints or multiple roles discovered. What do you make of that, going back to the idea that this was maybe just one person?
Again, I bounced that theory myself, right? It's a possibility, and maybe that's why we're struggling to solve this case. I mean, Nancy's a 84-year-old woman, and, you know, he might have taken her by surprise and might have subdued her fairly quickly and maybe took her out, and maybe that's why we're not getting a tip. So, I mean, we're all just speculating, right? The door thing kind of threw me off a little bit because, you know, I would think that, I told you that story, he propped the door open maybe because there's other bad guys. So who knows? Everyone has their theories. I'm kind of getting sick of hearing everyone's theories, to be honest.
On that note, John, let me hear your theory. No, John, I mean, what do you make? Have you sort of ruled out a one person scenario? Because now Jennifer Koffendoffer has brought that back into the fold here. And she's very experienced, but she does bring up good points. We see one person on camera. We see one person very cool, calm, collected. And as far as we know, and again, it's only what we know, but we've never heard anything about multiple sets of footprints around there. But we also never really heard anything about any footprints around there.
Yeah, I think, you know, long-term detectives don't rule anything out. And you know, the facts that she suggests on why it could be one person is further bolstered by the fact that you don't have anybody trying to, you know, roll on somebody else and claim the reward and come forward. So I think the Hell's Angels had that saying that two can keep a secret if one is dead. And it could be true in this case. But when it comes to, you can't just focus on I remember I had one case one time where I didn't think this one guy did it at all, but I wanted to poly him anyway, because I wanted to get him out of the rotation. And it turned out that he was the guy. So I learned that message early on when my hair was dark, and that wasn't very, you know, it was a long time ago, that you just don't rule anything out. You go with the facts that you have, keep an open mind. And if something comes up and it takes you in another direction, you walk that path until you get to a dead end, and then you find another path.
Lee from Tennessee to Lieutenant Bob Krieger here. Do you think there's any possibility that Nancy might have started resisting when they started to take her outside the safer place of her home, and maybe, you know, being from being inside, which is safer. And that's where the blood comes into play, Bob. But also this one person theory. Curious to hear what you have to say about that.
I'll start with the one person theory first, because this is the perfect example, Joel, we talked about earlier. Why do you get another set of eyes looking at it? Most people think there was two. Someone says there's one. So let's look at it. It's just a different perspective. And the more I think about it, you know, if I'm by myself, I'm going to prop doors open. I'm not going to rely on having someone else open a door for me. So I'm setting some things up maybe to make it easier for me to leave that house if I'm walking with someone or dragging someone. So there's some credibility there. So, you know, just the realist in me, the cop in me says there were probably more than one, but I absolutely would not. It wouldn't surprise me if it were only one. And again, because a lot of information is not coming out, you know, it's easier to keep a secret when there's only one person involved. And what was the other part of the question? It was the one.
That's a good question. I don't know. I have no idea, but it's fine. We'll come back to it. I've got more questions where that came from. A couple more minutes and then we will get final thoughts here. If you're just joining us, it is the 2-month mark in the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie, day 60, which is hard to believe. This is one of the original, if maybe the only original missing persons poster. And you see there dated January 31st, 2026, with her description. So it's just hard to believe that we're there. John, one of the other things that came up with Savannah Guthrie's multi-part interview is that she believes that the two of the ransom notes were genuine and legitimate. I'm curious what you made of that, hearing that news. And is it possible those are, you know, we're all immediately thinking the TMZ notes, but maybe there were some notes that we're not aware of. But just curious what you thought about her thinking that they were real.
Well, Joel, you nailed it right there. There might be some notes we're not aware of that maybe they didn't release. And then, you know, she mentioned it in an offhand comment or something like that. The TMZ stuff, I'm a little suspicious of, because why send it to them? I mean, Harvey Levin, he does what he does. And a lot of it is pretty interesting. But why involve him in it if you actually have some stuff? But rewind real quick, that other question that was going to Bob was from that. I think it was Leah. She was asking if the bloodletting in the area outside the front door was the result of her resisting after she was taken out of the house. And I think Leah nailed it on that. That's kind of the conclusion that I would draw. I wouldn't lock in and set cement in it and let it harden into concrete, but it seems likely that that would have happened. And then looking at some of the other comments that come in, you got a great audience here. I haven't been on your show before, but you got some pretty good detectives that are sitting out there watching us rattle on. And the good thing is that I guess they can drink a beer while they're watching that. And we probably wouldn't, even though I don't drink beer, but it's good stuff there with your audience.
Yeah, we say there's a sign behind me. Best guest, better community. We've got the best community going. Mike, to you, very, very early on, I was talking to Dr. G Explains, who has a massive YouTube channel. He does body language and behavior, and he's a friend of mine. And he's also, you know, a psychologist who sits there and listens to people's problems all day long. But he had a theory of his own. He thinks that whoever is responsible, either a person or people, his theory is that they're from the medical field, because she had a lot of medical ailments. She was at doctor's offices, not a doctor per se, but like either a healthcare aide or someone that works as a nurse or something in a doctor's office. And he thought that because if you notice a face off that Nest camera and you relate it to someone in a medical office, you're probably going to say to yourself, no, there's no way it could be this guy. This guy's a healthcare worker. He takes care of people. And so you're going to kind of shrug it off. And maybe that's why we haven't found him yet. Yet another theory to speculate on, Mike, which I know you're getting sick of. But have you thought about that, that whoever did this could be from the healthcare field? And that's because she had a lot of issues. And that's why they're kind of being overlooked, maybe.
That never crossed my mind. I never had that theory that it could be someone from the medical field. I'm more of the school that they didn't realize what they were getting into. They didn't realize that she had a heart condition that, you know, that and that's why probably she might have passed during this abduction. And this is why we are where we are, because now they don't know what to do. They have no leverage. They can't give proof of life. And, you know, that's why there's no more ransom notes as far as we know. And no, I never thought of somebody from the medical field.
Yeah. Well, for those who do not know Mike is a retired NYPD detective, Michael Alcazar, all around great guy. His colleagues are starring on a Netflix reality show right now about the NYPD and homicide cases. It's a great show. I highly recommend it to all true crime devotees. But Mike, 60 days in, what are your thoughts on this 2-month anniversary? Your final thoughts here?
I'm hoping that they have a lot of evidence and information they're processing that we're just not privy to. And for the family, I hope that they solve this case and that they find Nancy. You know, it's not unusual for cases to go long like this. Again, it's under heavy scrutiny from us, from the media, from the news. But, you know, it's not something out of the realm of being solved. So I'm hoping that they can still solve it.
Mm. Someone saying if it was a medical person, I think they might go for the money. That's a good point, maybe, but maybe not. You just never know. It's just interesting to hear all these theories. It's excellent to have retired Detective John Bueller on, who worked the Lacey Peterson case out of Modesto, California. What are you up to these days, John? I heard you're teaching. Are you doing any investigative work?
Well, I do some consulting for the sheriff's office down here on their cold cases. So I'm down there 2 days a week doing some stuff with them. And then I teach at the academy a little bit and a little bit of fishing and missing the job. I mean, people talk about Peterson and everything like that. We had a lot of cases. It wasn't the only murder case I worked, but we had a lot of really interesting cases, tragedies all, but real interesting. And I loved that job. It was just the only thing that would have been better is flying jets off a carrier. The only thing that would have been better. But
Did you ever was that something you were considering, being an Air Force pilot?
Yeah, I didn't have the eyesight for it. You know, I had a color blindness thing, so it worked out good in the career because I was kind of colorblind on things. But I got a neighbor that's got a pink house down here. All the neighbors, you know, can't stand it. But to me, it just looks gray, so it doesn't bother me at all.
Hey, Krieger, how come you didn't become an Air Force pilot? You seem like you should be an Air Force pilot.
I actually had my congressional letters to go to West Point and the Air Force Academy. But coming out of high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I chose Purdue. And then the rest is history. I did an internship, and it got me where I am today.
Well, there you go. That's how it happens. But, John, 60 days in here, I want to get your final thoughts. But since you mentioned you're spending 2 days a week down at the sheriff's office, if Sheriff Chris Nano said, Detective Bueller, get down here, what would be the first thing where would you start with all this?
I'd start looking at the victim outwards. I'd look at everybody that she knows. And even, you know, like when Mike was talking earlier about the healthcare workers, you know, is there somebody that's connected with a medical office that she goes to for treatment that maybe has a gambling issue or owes people money or something like that? Maybe a drug problem that nobody knows about, things like that. But searching associates of the family, working outwards from everybody in that orbit. And then, of course, checking to see anybody that could have a vindictive issue with Savannah, something that she said on the air. I'd be looking at recently released violent offenders that just came out on parole from custody that targeted females. There might be something there. That was one of the things that we would do on a lot of our cases is recently released violent offenders. A lot of times they would end up reoffending as soon as they got out of the joint. So I'd be screening every one of those that I could find and see where that shakes out. That would pretty much be it. And then see what else the sheriff wants me to do and work with the best people on the planet. And Trekking today said, no, we don't put cheese on a burger. I don't know where they heard that, but thank you for that, Trekking today.
Yes, says for those who are listening, Trekking today with a super chat, John Bueller is the GOAT, greatest of all time. Love hearing his perspective on everything. Side note to John, I too do not understand why people put cheese on a burger. It's a documentary reference. I have no idea. what that's about. Fantastic. But yeah, gosh. I'll take your words on that. Bob really needs to go help the sheriff. I don't know how well that would go, the two of them in a closed door room, but you never know. On that note, he is retired Lieutenant Bob Krieger with Pima County Sheriff's Department, a Purdue Boilermakers fan. That didn't work out quite the way he wanted it to. That begs the question, are you now rooting for UA, the Wildcats, Arizona, to take it all, Lieutenant Bob?
I was mad for the first 24 hours. living here, it's tough. And I'll be honest, because that's one thing I'm honest. I kind of want Michigan to win. I'm sorry. I'm a Big Ten guy. I love Kurt. You know, I waited 30 years for another riot on the SWAT team. You know, when I first got hired, they won and they rioted. And then 30 years, they couldn't do anything. We always had great plans in place, which they do again. And I don't want anyone to riot. But, you know, from the cop standpoint, let's do this. I'm looking for good basketball at this point. If whoever wins that Michigan-Arizona game, I do want to win it all. And God bless UConn, even though I hate them for beating us 2 years ago, just to knock Duke out. So sorry about all that to all you Dukies.
Yeah, that was a great last-second shot there. It was unbelievable. Great games. And their coach from where else? Jersey. You got the Hurley brothers.
Clearly he's from Jersey.
Clearly, yes. He's a lunatic. So Lieutenant Bob, 60 days in here. Never thought we would be here. The COE and I took a trip 3 weeks ago, and I was like, I'm gonna miss the arrest here. Now we're 60 days in. Your thoughts on this unenviable milestone?
I didn't think we'd be here either. It may be another 60. It may be another 6 years. I keep saying that. Something's going to give sooner or later. The men and women working here continue to work hard. There's going to be a lot of outside noise, most of it caused by folks like us throwing theories around, not having really any absolute detail of what's going on behind the scenes. And once they do arrest someone or some closure happens with this, most of us are going to be surprised, like, oh, my God, I never knew that happened. And they were doing a good job the whole time. And that's really how this is going to play out. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah. And just hearkening back to Brian Koberger, that was 7 weeks and the world was imploding and everyone thought he would never be caught. And they were kind of following him the whole time. We're getting close to that 7 week mark. And are we, I guess we, is it? Yeah, we just passed that. Seven, yeah, just passed it. So I was doing math in my head and obviously not very good math. So we did just pass it. But, you know, who knows? We will soon find out. Like Bob said, there could be a lot of things that we don't know about. You've got to remain optimistic. And the very, very small chance that Nancy is with us, bring her home. And if she's not with us any longer, still bring her home. So the family has some peace and tranquility. And Savannah Guthrie, she's coming back to work next week. So that's going to be another big media firestorm. People are going to be looking at that. We'll be following that. We're following other stories. There's a woman in Oakland right now, Amy Hilliard, who's missing. We picked that up. So keep an eye out for us. We're going to be doing tape shows tomorrow and Friday. No Carm this week, but you get some really cool tape shows. I interviewed a deep undercover ATF agent who had an informant, and then the government turned on his informant and he wrote a book about it. And then the Stephanie Lazarus, LAPD detective arrested for a homicide. We looked at her interview. So keep an eye out for that. Have a good Friday. Happy Easter. Happy Passover and whatever else you celebrate. Love you, America. Love you, California. Love you, New York, New York. And love you, Tucson, Arizona. Please bring Nancy home and guests. Stick around 1 second.